This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Big night tonight, Bob, celebrating the 15-year anniversary of The Fan. We'll be at Rivers Casino.
And you're one of the originals from the very beginning.
We were just trying to figure that out here. Of originals on this station who have been with the station the whole time, it's Filippone, Mueller, and me, I think. Am I missing anybody? I don't think I am.
No, I don't think so. When did Craig get here? Wasn't he producing from the beginning?
Yeah. He was a part-time producer, I believe, at the beginning. And on the first day, as the story goes, Bob, I was a nervous wreck. I think it was February. Today's not the official anniversary. It was like February 10th or the 15th or something. I can't remember.
Ron wasn't an original?
He was, but he's not here anymore, Bob.
Oh, but he was an original.
A lot of people were originals, but they're not here anymore. John Burton was an original. Jim Colony was an original.
Why are you getting mad at me?
Greg Giannotti. Vinny Ricci. Vinny Ricci was an original.
Be there tonight?
No, but, well, I can't say no for sure. I don't want to say that yet. I don't know about Vinny. I've heard some things. He'll be involved. Let's put it that way.
I think Vinny and Ron should come in together.
Well, what's happening with Ron? I think there's been some problems. Did Ron want his own private jet to come back here? What's happening with Ron?
Yeah, he might have needed a complete first-class shuttle for him to be here. I'm not optimistic about Ron's attendance, but we're not ruling it out.
How about a video from Ron, a little video tribute to himself?
Not optimistic about Ron's attendance, but we're not going to rule anything out.
Yeah. The first day, Bob, whenever it was, I was a nervous wreck. I had the 2 o'clock show with John Seibel. And
is he coming back?
He's an original, too, by the way. I don't think so. No, unless we want to continue our fight in the parking
cage
lot.
Match.
Yeah.
Spice.
Can you imagine if we just replayed that, if he came back and we recreated that fight? That would be tremendous. But I was a nervous wreck, and I started getting stomach problems at around 12:30. And then between then and 2 o'clock, I was having more blowouts than the 07 Patriots. And Craig Riley, who was now our boss, went out to the store and got me medication, Bob. Did you know that little piece of fan trivia?
But we can't have a host who's having all sorts of eruptions in your stomach. That doesn't, it would lead to very much inconsistent radio. So he had to do what he had to do.
You know what? I just thought of an idea. A little bits of fan trivia throughout the show. Do you like that?
I would love that.
All right.
Will you be presenting it as a original OG member? You're like an OG SNL member here for the big anniversary party.
I'll give you guys the questions. You give me the answers. I can't guarantee they're all correct, but that was the first one. Who bought me stomach medication to calm my nerves and blowouts on day one? It was Craig Riley. Who was the first programming director here? Does either one of you know the answer?
Terry Fox.
Yeah, very good, Bob. Bob's winning 1-0 on that one. Very good. And he's noted for when we got the pirate rights, or when we renewed them, I think when they came, or when they came back, I don't remember what the occasion was, whatever it was, they had a big deal over at PNC Park, mm-hmm. and Terry came in and there was a cheese wheel. And at the end of the news conference, he picked up the cheese wheel, put it under his arm, and took it home.
Those are heavy.
Yeah.
Those are really
He took
heavy.
It home, Bob, in a little, almost like a doggy bag. But it was a cheese wheel. It was incredible.
Well, I guess if it's going to go to waste, somebody has to take it. He decided to take it.
Who made the first phone call to me to tell me they wanted to interview me at the station? Who would have made that phone call?
Michael Young.
Very good. Bob's 2 for 2. Michael Young. And I didn't know who he was. I got him confused with the cameraman that you used to work with, Michael Chalik, was it?
Yeah.
That's who I thought was calling me.
Now enjoying his retirement life, Michael Chalik. Hello, Michael, if you're out there listening.
Hi, Michael. I didn't know who Michael Young was. I didn't know where the station was. I didn't know anything about radio or who was in it. So I thought when I checked my messages, it was Michael Chalik, the cameraman, just saying he was tipped off like, hey, you might want to give a call over there, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Michael Young's message was even vague, like, hey, give me a call. I got something to talk about. I thought it was Michael Chalik. Can you believe that, Bob?
Michael Young had an eye for talent, as evidenced by your presence here today.
Well, I think a lot of people would disagree with you, Bob. Here's my last piece of trivia. Who recommended me for a job here? Who recommended me? Who was the point person, to the best of my understanding? And again, this is somebody you can direct your hate mail toward, him and Michael Young. But this person behind the scenes said you should give that guy a call.
Ron Cook.
No. No, it was not.
Let me get a second guess here. Behind the scenes.
Limits, are you ever going to hazard a guess at anything here?
Well, I would have gotten the first two questions wrong. I'm going to say Jeff Hathorn, who is also an original member.
I'm going to say.
That's a pretty good guess, but no.
Eric.
Another
Eric
good
Hagman.
Guess. Another good no. guess, but no. But you guys are both.
Jim Colony.
Yes.
It had to be one of them, yeah. Because they were all there, and they respect you, and a lot of people respect your writing, and could it translate into radio? And the answer is yes.
Old Jimbo Balls himself, Bob, recommended.
Find those Jimbo Balls anywhere you go. Normally in the deep weeds.
Behind the scenes. How about that? Jim Colony may very well be responsible for where I am right now.
He'll be there, right?
Across from Bob.
He'll
I think
be
so.
There. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He'll get a rounding ovation tonight.
I certainly hope so. All right. We'll do little bits of trivia throughout the day, and we're looking forward to tonight. Bob, you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, but I got to get there a little late because I'm on TV until 7. By the
it's
time
always
I,
something with you, Bob, but we'll
is,
see
but
you
that's,
there.
You knew that going
know,
into this.
I know. There
I have
is.
A lot of,
You're very sensitive
by
to
By the
that.
Way, ding,
I'm
ding,
sorry.
Ding, some breaking news.
What?
Donnie Football does not exist anymore. He's changed it to Donnie Chedrick.
What is happening with this? Did he send out a tweet?
No, I saw a tweet just now, and it's Donnie Chedrick, and I'm for one, you know, the last name means something. You know, the family matters here.
For sure. And I'm for that, but Bob, you know, did it mean something to Cher, to Shaq, to Johnny Football,
to Pele,
to Magic Johnson? His name's Irvin, you know, and I'm sure he liked that name.
No, I understand from the business point of view.
But you got to keep your stage. What does the tweet say?
It's just it's something that Adam put it out. He kind of quote
Adam Crowley.
Yes, and he quote tweeted whatever it was, and it says Donnie Chedrick.
Well, what do you mean? Is Donnie saying I'm going to go by this name now? Or
how else would you take that?
Well, he was on here with us last week saying he's very, and this is perfectly understandable and laudable even.
He's going to get married. He doesn't want it to be Mrs. Football.
It's,
you know, how
his
Mrs.
Last
Football,
name
how
means
are you?
Something to him. He's the only boy in the family, so he carries the name. I get it. But you also, in my opinion, have to keep that stage name.
Yeah,
in
like
some
Lady
form.
Gaga is Lady Gaga? No, she's not Lady Gaga.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. So I would be very, very careful with that if I was Donnie Football. Yes, Limits?
I have an update on that, actually.
Please.
One of our friends that listens, Sean, tweeted at Donnie, are you still going to be Donnie Football? And Donnie responded to the tweet and said, August 1st return.
That's pretty good. If he's Donnie, it's almost like Superman and Clark Kent. He's going to be Donnie Chedrick from February to August, and then he turns into Donnie Foot. He goes in
so
the phone
booth. He's a seasonal guy.
He goes in the phone booth and comes out as Donnie Football.
When is he getting married? Do we know that? I thought this had something to do with marriage.
I think it does. It seems to be coinciding, yeah. But I also think it's important him to carry on the legacy of the name.
If you had to put Joe what instead of Starkey, what would it be? Joe Baseball, Joe Column, Joe...
I haven't thought about that. Joey Bats, I guess.
There is a Joey Bats already taken.
Jose Batista.
Born on this day to Donnie and Sarah Cornelius Football, March 10th, 2027.
Cornelius Football, how are you?
Bob, we have so much to get to today that I don't know where to start. We have an unbelievable show planned with the likes of Jay Caulfield and Sonny Vaccaro, who just came out with,
how about that?
With a book.
85 years old, you were telling me, right?
Yeah. Is that going to be a treat? But we begin not with a six-pack. Well, with two six-packs.
Oh.
Brought to you by Bet365 Off the Top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Hello, Joe, if you're out there. Here's a rundown. And he's another guy. He's JP. He's not... I'm sure he's proud of the name, right? Potocnik, but he's JP and he's also a mustache. He's a walking mustache, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, you become what you become.
Yes, and you have to embrace that as well. It sounds like Donnie's doing it right, though. All right, let's do two six-packs, which to my way of thinking equals a 12-pack, Bob. Big news this morning. Don't know if you saw it. We know the Rams told Matthew Stafford, go out and seek your lot in life and come back to us. Well, guess who's interested? Tom Brady. According to Pro Football Talk, Brady has been in contact with Stafford's camp about the possibility of Stafford playing for the Raiders this season. This is getting real. Now, I know Sean McVay was on a couple outlets yesterday saying, yeah, our goal is to keep him, but it gets tricky, that type of thing, you know. Listen, Bob, if I'm Matthew Stafford, and let's say my choices came down to the Steelers and the Raiders were going to pony up my $50 million, they might have a little Ashton Jeanty here, Brock Bowers there.
That's the one piece.
Jacoby Myers here, T. Higgins there.
If you sign him.
Chip Kelly, Pete Carroll. That looks pretty enticing to me, certainly more enticing than Artie Smith and let's run the ball every first down.
Well, I mean, for that team, they have been in that search for a quarterback mode for quite some time as well. And Brady, you know, he knows what he's doing when it comes to analyzing quarterbacks, I know. I find it interesting that he's still doing commentating and he's running an organization, essentially, by recruiting people. But I think, why wouldn't they do that if you're out there? Vegas wants to try to win now. They have... And Brock Bauer is terrific at what he does.
If they have
a free agent receiver, you know, I don't know how good or bad their defense is, given what I saw last year and what they're losing this year. I don't know enough about it, but I do know they're in the entertainment business. They're in Vegas for a reason.
Yeah,
and if you're going to have that, you need that. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
They have $100 million in cap space, Bob.
Yeah, a lot of teams have more cap space because of the way things are going up. They're going to shred some contracts.
$100 million. You spend... You know, whatever you spend on Stafford, you still have plenty left. You have the sixth pick in the draft. Bowers is a star. Jacoby Myers is a 1,000-yard receiver with no quarterback. You bring in a T. Higgins or a Keenan Allen or whoever else you can name at receiver. They're open for business for anybody. But
Chip Kelly, I think, is a pretty good offensive mind. You can tell he's had his problems at times at certain places. But overall, I think he's a good offensive mind.
So do I. And the real key in all of this is when Tom Brady wants something, and when you bring in Tom Brady to essentially be your point man on things, you're giving him, he wouldn't take a job if he didn't have all kinds of power. And I would think he would be pretty persuasive. Like if I'm a quarterback looking for a place and Tom Brady wants me, I think that would be pretty hard to turn down. And I also think that Tom Brady has everything he needs at his disposal financially and everything else to try to get a deal done. I don't think Brady goes after things and doesn't win, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and he recognizes how good of a talent Stafford is. And if they have that kind of money available, good for them, and they'd be able to accommodate him on his money needs. But I still don't think that's the best place for Stafford in terms of trying to win. If he's trying to win, I'm not looking at the Raiders as a team that ultimately can
Who
get
Who are
there.
You looking at?
I told you, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
That's it's my team. If I'm them, I again, J.J. McCarthy's a talented kid. What they have in him, who knows? But for now and for a short term, I would just rather go in that direction and tell J.J. if I don't trade him, you're the future here, dude. Just hang on. And give examples of what happened in Green Bay plenty of times over, and Philadelphia and other places where they've drafted quarterbacks and made them wait a little bit. You'll get that chance, but you're going to have a chance to work with this guy, Matthew Stafford, too.
Then, if that happens, you may see Sam Darnold head over to Chip Kelly.
Well, that's another thing. They seem to like him. I saw certainly a rejuvenated quarterback, but also at the end, not so much. You know, so that's a tough call. And the market is the market. He's going to make $40-plus million also.
I think the Raiders have a chance to win next season. I really do. I like the hiring of Pete Carroll. Next. All right, Limits. That gets us back to our friend and yours, Omar Khan. And he not only spoke to assembled media together, then he went off with the NFL, I believe the NFL Network's Judy Batista, who's very good at what she does. And he addressed the quarterbacks sort of the same way he did with the assembled media, but On the heels of this Stafford news, let's hear from Judy and Omar.
Is looking outside the organization for a quarterback, free agency trade, is that a possibility?
You know, preferably, we have the two guys that we had between Russ and Justin. That's our first preference. But the reality is we don't have a guy under contract. So until that happens, you know, all options have to be on the table for us.
Here's my question there. And again, with Matthew Stafford the other day, I was saying probably not a first-round pick for me. I wouldn't, and the $50 million, I don't think I'd be inclined to do that. Having said that, if the Steelers believe, and they surely do believe, that they're not that far from winning, that we can argue about that. Every action they ever take indicates that they always think they're close. How could Justin Fields or Russell Wilson be your, quote, first preference if Matthew Stafford is available? That makes no sense, Bob. His first preference should be the best player at the position.
I think what you're not getting in that answer, and Rich Walsh from our station also interviewed him, and the thing I take away from all of these interviews is that there is much more to this. It sounds fine. Matthew Stafford, sure, you like him and appreciate the talent, but what you have to give up, how much you have to pay, all of that becomes part of this, and that's why he's not going to tell you that. He's going to keep, quote, all options on the table, because that's the best way to do it at this point.
But he also doesn't have to say that our preference is one of these two guys.
Well, he said it last year. His preference was, is there a quarterback who's going to be your starter in the building? The answer is yes.
He said he had, quote, full faith in Kenny
right.
at
so,
this time.
I mean, that's why this kind of stuff I don't pay a lot of attention to. I know everyone wants to, and everybody wants to look at it and parse it down. To me, it's just they're obligated to talk, so they talk.
If you had a choice between Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, or Matthew Stafford with no strings attached,
there's no call. But
it's
there
easy.
Are strings attached, and those strings make it difficult for some teams to entertain that option.
Would it come down to the Steelers being cheap?
No.
You think they'd pay $50 million for Matthew Stafford?
I think ultimately, if you get the... I mean, they gave Ben Roethlisberger $200 million contracts. They gave T.J. Watt. They'll spend what they have to spend. So I never look at them that way. I think they're more than willing to going up to the cap every year. It's just that in this case, the age is a factor. All of it is a factor to me. And I still think down deep, they want to discover who their next quarterback is long term, so they don't have to go through this perpetual stuff like Indianapolis did when they brought in Carson Wentz, Philip Rivers, Matt Ryan.
But they can't this offseason probably.
I know, I'm just saying,
future.
That's why the best bet for me is to load up with everything else around you, use free agency to bring in people who can start and play right now, draft good people, and then when the time is right, and that would be next year probably, then go after your quarterback and use assets you can to get him.
Next, my preference would be to scale back, trade T.J. Watt, Minka, Pickens, build with young guys and maybe take a step back next year, which brings us to a team that in my mind, even though this sucks to watch this happen in many ways, is in a way better place than the Steelers. And that is your Pittsburgh Penguins, coming off a horrific loss last night to the Philadelphia Flyers. The Penguins have given up 19 goals in the last three games. It's the first time they've done that since 2003. And it sure does feel like the old X generation over again. Bob, who was your favorite character from the X generation? I preferred Rico Fatta.
Ron Flockhart. I don't Flocky Hockey. Rico Fatta was, yeah.
Ramsey Abid was one of my favorites.
Oh, my God.
Chris Beach, Ross Lupus, Chuck.
Chris Beach almost married Sonny Abad. It would have been Sonny Beach, and I had a lot to do with that.
Would they you have been dating. Invited? Yeah, you would have been invited for sure to that wedding.
Yeah,
right?
But it didn't work out. Thankfully, it didn't work out. And Sonny has very nice family and everything else. So
here we are, Bob. They didn't mean to get here this soon, but if the draft were tomorrow, and this is unbelievable, really. If the draft were tomorrow, the Penguins would be drafting fifth. It hurts, it stinks to watch games like last night, especially against the Flyers, but this is actually where they need to be. And for a brief time, it's where the Steelers have needed to be for at least 1 year for a long time. They just either can't or won't get there. They won't. The Penguins are here in spite of themselves. And I think it's the place to be. You?
Well, certainly, if you know, they need talent. And if you're going to be in a position where you can draft high, you know, I don't know what this draft is going to be like or what they can get. But you would assume it's going to be somebody who could come in here and play, and not immediately, but be a big part of your future. Plus, they have 29 draft picks. You know, 15 of them in the top three. You know, they've slowly but surely acquired picks. If you go back to the days of before Mario Lemieux, you remember Gene Ubriaco sneaking through the bowels of the arena so he didn't have to walk across the ice and absorb boos, right, from the fans. He would do all these things. Come back in memory to me. Tony Esposito when he was the GM, and then the second time around when they needed to win a lottery, and they did. I mean, you remember what it's like going into those. So apparently we're in that boat right now, again, not by their choice, by their play, which has been just miserable. So, yeah, you have to start somewhere on a rebuild. If they're not calling it that, it's kind of what it is. It may not be a full, you know, on rebuild, but it is a rebuild, make no mistake, and that's why I would think Ricard Raquel is going to be part of the process.
Limits. Thank you, sir. Man, that brings up Raquel yet again. And I've read and heard where the logic behind keeping him is so that Sid can keep his points per game, you know, averaging a point per game, that streak extended to whatever it's at right now. And while I have respect for that streak and unending respect for Sid, I just saw a list yesterday of names available at the trade deadline. It was put out by The Athletic. I think Chris Johnson is very good at his job. Ricard Raquel is number two of everybody available. If you keep that guy just based on that rationale, you're out of your mind. This is the perfect time to sell on him. Maybe you can get rid of Carlson, and then this offseason, it's time to have a reckoning with some of these other guys. Maybe there's nothing you can do, but you'll be in position to move Rust if you want to. This offseason, you beg Letang to maybe move on. You ask Mike Sullivan, do you have the stomach for this, Mike? Do you? I mean, we can get you to a place where you'll have a chance to win. Does Mike Sullivan really have a stomach for this? He came off coaching the Four Nations.
Yes.
He's won a couple
quite
cups.
A contrast, huh?
He's complicit in the demise here. Don't get me wrong. But really? I mean, you want to live through this? The Penguins have reached, you know, a very important point in their franchise history here. And I don't know that Kyle Dubas is the guy that I trust to get it done, but here we are. And it's time to move some people and get more assets and better assets. Draft picks are wonderful. But man, in the NHL, if you're not drafting real high, there are no guarantees. So you better accumulate as many as you possibly can if you're going to get this thing turned around.
I also wonder about the future of Fenway Sports Group. How much of this do they want to sit around for? They moved into this franchise because they thought it was an asset that they could use as part of their portfolio of sports teams. Well, it's not worked out that way. Ever since they've gotten here, they got absolutely zero in terms of playoff dollars. This likely will continue. What do they do? Do they want to, you know, at some point put it up for sale?
Is a great question. And part of their portfolio right now, it's like a little asterisk on the bottom.
Right.
There's a little symbol, and then you have to look down in the small print, and it says, by the way, we also own the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that's
Wouldn't it be cool?
That's it, in
small print. After last night's Lakers game, if someone went in and said, LeBron, as a co-owner of the Penguins, what do you think about their situation?
Yes.
Do you want to move on from them?
Yes. somebody's got to start asking some questions around there, because that's a good one right there. Next. Ovechkin scores another one, Bob, and now he only needs 12 to break Gretzky's record. This dude is averaging this season. He's on as good a goal scoring pace as he's ever been on. And it's unreal. He has 30 goals in 42 games. So on his pace, he's going to score 18 more. Now, I don't know if he can keep up this pace. So it could come down to that final game.
Yes.
You weren't here yesterday, but we had a robust discussion on whether people wanted it to come down to the game in Pittsburgh to end the season. I think it's April 17th.
17th, yep.
Do you want to see that in Pittsburgh? Would you stand and cheer for Ovechkin, Bob?
Yes. There's a respect factor. I would. I appreciate all those things. We were at PNC Park when Albert Pujols hit a home run late in the year a few years ago. I think it was number 706. I forget which one it was.
I was at that game, Bob. It was 696.
690, whatever it was. Yeah, but I stood up. I appreciate athletic success, stability, longevity. I mean, this guy has had 19 30-goal seasons, Joe, out of 20 years. 19. You could call him whatever you want to call him. I call him the best at what he does, which is shooting the puck and putting it in places that goaltenders cannot stop it. So, yes, I would absolutely do it. And if I were someone who was interested in making money, I would buy tickets, as many as I could, right now, betting that April 17th would be the day. And then if I so choose, I should sell some of them, because you know if he's within a hat trick, and not just one goal, but if he's within a hat trick, he has a possibility of doing it on that game.
Well, I think he's going to do it before then.
Nah, I think it's going
to... He's on pace to have 18 more goals.
I know what the pace is,
goals,
but if you looked at his season, he's had some valleys and some peaks, and when he gets hot, he's hot. When he goes cold, it takes a while. So.
But here's the other thing, and Steige was on yesterday talking about this. Our team's going to give him some empty netters. He leads the league with 7 empty net goals. Would you give him one, Bob, late in a game?
Well, how would you give him one?
I mean, you don't walk aside and, well.
You're trying to win a game, you pull a goaltender.
It was
that's standard process.
It was 6-3 when they pulled their goalie the other day.
That's the way things are today in the NHL. Are you going to not do it so that he doesn't score in your empty net?
Do you think somebody's going to pull a Brett Favre with Michael Strahan and give him the record on an empty netter?
Again, I think that's a whole different kind of situation. It's one thing for, in Favre's situation, Strahan just fell down. I mean, that's an obvious.
This, do you get out of Ovechkin's way if you're up three goals late?
No, I think you try to.
There's I guess one of the reasons he leads the league in empty net goals is because they're ahead all the time.
Right.
But that also.
Sidney Crosby's had all the great players have had empty net goals.
That also feeds into this, though. If they keep winning, he's going to have. I don't think it's going to come down to Pittsburgh. I don't think he's only getting 12 more goals.
I certainly hope it does. And if it does, I'd be standing in the press box for him. I appreciate that kind of stuff. I never thought Wayne Gretzky's record would be broken. Never. I thought just because of the age factor. Here he is, 40 years old, or 39, going to be 40 soon, and he's still playing. He got injured. He had surgery. Came right back.
Yeah.
And he's leading that team to the best record in the East.
It's incredible, Bob. It's incrinculant. It's incorrigible. It's incoherent. Limits, next. Sully doesn't want to blame the goalies around here, Bob. What say you? Because it looks like Nedeljkovic and everybody else just absolutely stinks. I'm glad that he's a nice guy and they view him as a leader. But that gets chalked up bringing him back this year as another F for Kyle Dubas.
Well, first of all, I think goaltending has got to be better. But I think you make your goaltending worse by giving up amazing opportunities on odd man breaks. And all this season, that's all we've seen. You put your goaltender at risk. Confidence is a big part of any goalie or any player for that matter. And when you're constantly being shell-shocked by two-on-ones, three-on-twos, one-on-nones, two-on-nones, you're gonna have your opportunities to get into a little bit of a rut. It's a two-way street with me. The goaltending has stunk. It starts with Jari. I don't know what I make out of Joel Blomqvist now. I have a little bit of a concern, but it's still young enough in the process that we see. But if I were Dubas, I'd be on the lookout for somebody. I don't know if I do it this year coming up, just because of all the things you cited about trying to win and get draft picks and all that stuff. But you gotta have better goaltending.
Would you play Jari the rest of the year on the theory that either he makes himself tradable or he loses all the time?
I think that ship has sailed. I don't think anyone's going to want him. So
well,
I think the best case scenario is to just, you could lose with Nedeljkovic and Blomqvist too. They've shown that. How many goals have they given him? 19 in three games.
A lot of good options for losing.
Yeah, so I would say no. I think the best option is just to buy him out.
Well, what if he came up?
Company?
Man, that's a big buyout.
All right, we were just talking about all these buyouts for coaches. I mean, at some point, you either do it or you don't.
Well, it's different in a salary cap sport where you have to pay him off forever.
So you have to pay him off forever. Would you rather have that or the ghost of Jari's gone past? Would you rather have him hanging around and still?
I would bring him up.
What are you going to get out of him for the money you're going to pay him?
Well, probably nothing. I would bring him up and play him. And if he plays great, maybe if you retain, I'd rather retain salary in a trade than just buy him out and have the Jack Johnson plan where you're paying the guy off forever and ever.
Well,
I don't know. It's a tough one. Would you buy it? What about Graves? Those two contracts were actually fireable offenses when you put them
those
together.
Those are albatrosses. Those
I'm going to say this out loud too, Bob. In 35 years in this town, I have never seen a GM who's doing bad at his job more lauded than this guy, Kyle Dubas. Now, you could say he's stockpiling draft picks. That's wonderful. I guess we'll find out what happens in the future, but he's not even launching a full rebuild. Make no mistake, he came here to try to win. You don't trade for Erik Karlsson if you're not trying to win. He brought in more veterans this year. Yes, he attached draft picks to them. He has failed. Ron Hextall made more good moves than this guy so far. And all I hear is wild praise and rarely heavy criticism. It's pretty incredible to me that this guy gets a free pass for a lot of people.
A lot of this, and this goes back to Hextall, I'd have to know specifically what orders he was under from management about which direction you proceed. Is it trying to win now or is it trying to build for the future? As we've discovered now, it's hard to do both. You can try that one foot in the water, the other foot not. It doesn't work. You have to make a determination. And if that's on ownership, that makes it tough on any GM when you're trying to analyze that GM. On this case, however, he was viewed in a lofty way. Like Kyle Dubas is this boy wonder. He's a metric guy. He knows what he's doing. But in Toronto, we saw that he can take you a little bit up, but then there were failings that shouldn't surprise you here in Pittsburgh, and he couldn't figure out his goaltending issue.
Right.
And the first move he makes here is coming out, and that's his responsibility.
Yes.
And he signs a guy. It's one thing to sign Jari. On its surface, I was not opposed to signing him. I did not like the term and the money. I thought that was a reach that they didn't need to go to. So there wasn't like there were a lot of teams interested anyway, I thought.
I mean, in Toronto, the heavy lifting was done when Kyle Dubas took that job. Lou Lamoriello built that team back into a 100-point team. Matthews was there. Marner was there. The Tavares signing was under Dubas's watch, but I think above his head.
Well, how much of him do you think is above his head? How much he's under certain orders to do whatever they...
First of all, his mandate in Toronto was to take a team that Lou Lamoriello built and that was already winning over the top or at least a little further. And in 5 years, he won one playoff series.
Right.
So he failed in Toronto. He came here, tried to win. You know, you don't sign Ryan Graves and Tristan Jari to $54 million.
You don't trade for Erik Karlsson and bring in $11 million more.
Exactly, and he failed miserably in year one and is failing in year two, although I will agree that things took a different turn, a different direction with the Gensel trade. But how much is he under franchise orders? I think this guy has a lot of power. Does Fenway Sports Group even know they have a hockey team in Pittsburgh? I think they told Kyle Dubas, do whatever the hell you want.
I disagree with that.
You do?
I do. I think there are certain things that they, you know, they wanted to maintain, and that was the nostalgic approach that the Penguins have taken and what they hoped it meant with arena sellouts, try to get back on that streak, all of this stuff. I don't think they ever thought they would fall this far back.
Sid and Gino, yes, are always off the table, and Sid should be able to do whatever he wants.
It goes beyond that,
though. He didn't need a mandate for that. That was decided before he got here.
Yeah, but what if he had ideas, or what if Hextall had ideas? Or maybe it goes back to Rutherford. Maybe his dismissal or his departure had to do with maybe he wanted to go in a different direction. I don't know.
I think Hextall was under ownership mandate to sign, like Sid's a separate case, right?
Sid is alone on an island.
To keep Malkin and Letang long term,
right.
Yes.
And they did. They had options to move on from that, even if it meant getting nothing in return because they were free agents. So what? You save money.
I think if Dubas was inclined to approach Gino and Letang, If that's what he wanted to do, he would have carte blanche to do that, I think.
Yeah, but now it's too late.
I don't know. With Letang, Josh Yeowie seems to feel that's still a viable possibility.
Okay, what would
to trade
you get?
Him. Cap space, number
okay,
one.
Besides cap space.
That's enough for me because okay. that equals players.
Right. I like that. But then if you're going to give 5-year, $27 million car, 6 years to Ryan Graves,
well,
you better make sure.
That's a problem.
Again, I cite Washington.
I love how
when
people.
When they were here, I was looking over all their roster, and I went into that little deep dive area of where
right.
they got these guys, how they
right.
got these guys. And they did it while still maintaining guys like Ovechkin, guys like Tom Wilson, guys like John Carlson. They did not move on from their highest, most successful people.
Yes, they did. By luck.
That's a whole day. I know Backstrom and Oshie are both out.
Which was worth
money.
Tens of millions
okay.
of dollars to them.
That's a story. You know, I understand that part of it. But what did they do with the monies they saved? They went out and they acquired people. They signed some good free agents.
Yeah, they
Again,
did.
Matt Roy is a guy
guys in their 20s, mostly.
And they've gotten much more bang for their buck. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to do it, you've got to hit on this stuff. You cannot. And then a series of one-year guys to try to fill out your bottom six. You know, ultimately, you'd want your bottom six to be totally comprised of guys who are in your system right now who could come up and play that, you know, game.
Soon enough, if they make the right picks.
I think Dubas, I'm not going to, my thing is incomplete with him. I want to see what happens with these draft picks.
Yeah, and he's got a long contract.
He does, and he's going to be judged by what happens.
So rebuild.
We'll see.
Get rid of the guys you can get rid of. And Raquel is one of them.
If they don't trade Raquel, then you have an idea of how things are going over there.
Right. They're still trying to walk that line, and they're still probably making moves to cater to Sid at a time when you really have to do what's best for the franchise. You really do. And I read and hear and see almost everything in this town as far as the Penguins go. And it's incredible to me that people give you the old, yeah, he signed those bad contracts with Jari and Graves. But, you know, it's like a quick little reference with a but attached to it. He signed two guys who can't play to $54 million in contracts. That hurts, Bob. We're going to have a lot of tributes at our fan-iversary tonight.
Are you going
to
sing?
For. No,
you
I had a song ready, and then... No, I'm not singing tonight.
No. I was ready to do a solo for you if you needed one.
I don't know. We could do a reprise of Malzi the Snowman if we want. I don't think anybody's in the Christmas spirit.
No.
One thing we didn't get to in our six-pack. Why don't you hit one more as we get to George Michalowski, Oh, Limitless Wonder. Is the Pitt basketball team, were they a 9-point favorite, 7-point favorite?
9-point favorites. This is worse, or not as worse as the Virginia game. I thought the Virginia game was the low point and then came along last night. Given what was at the line or at stake here, you can't play defense the way they played defense last night.
I mean, Capel said they fought. They were a 7-point favorite and got out-rebounded by 10. The Pitt looked like there were five people there, including Carl Krauser, who's awesome. When he's
fiery even now,
yeah,
right?
I love that guy.
I do too.
This is not good, needless to say, on both fronts with Pitt. I wrote about this morning for the Post-Gazette, Bob, about how Alan Green walked into this situation. Could he fire these guys if he wanted to? I don't think he could. I think Pitt's in a financial bind. Now, how do you get out of a financial bind? Well, sometimes the boosters do it. And these two coaches are hired or signed, I should say, forever through 2030 at least. Green walked into a similar situation at Auburn. A month before he was hired there, Gus Malzahn was given a 7-year extension. Mm-hmm. Then he underachieved, and it was the same thing. It was like, is this guy just stuck with Malzahn? And I'll read you from Sports Illustrated, Bob, and I quote, influential boosters orchestrated a palace coup and ran Malzahn out of his job with the hefty buyout that came with it. I think that's the only scenario by which they move on from Narduzzi and or Capel. Agree?
Well, but it wouldn't be coming from the athletic director. Or if he wanted it, he'd have to get the guys and recruit them to do this. They have to come up with the money.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Is it would take a palace coup driven by the boosters. And I don't think it's happening. Do you?
No, just because of the money involved and all the NIL money that is necessary to compete and what you're trying to do. You have a budget for all this stuff. The budgets have gone straight out the door. There's every year it gets worse and worse. So they're in a predicament, and you're not one of the elite teams in any of these situations, which means it's harder to get people to pay for you.
No, they've become mediocre again, unfortunately, definitely in football. And in basketball, this season's just turning into a mega disappointment. And they're going to miss the tournament for the sixth time in 7 years under Capel. Neither coach has really stoked the fan base in any kind of way, in any meaningful way, right?
No, I mean, you start – and the one common thing is we've seen complete collapses at the end of all sports seasons this year around Pittsburgh. You know, 7-0 football goes to 7-6. Pitt's now falling off at the end of basketball. We've seen it with the Penguins, the Steelers. I mean, it just – it's a hodgepodge of nothingness.
It really is. Three more losses for our teams yesterday. Let's bring on George Michalowski from Pittsburgh Sports Now. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. So, George, that was a disaster. It looks like Pitt's, unless they win the ACC tournament, is not going to be in the NCAA tournament. So what's your understanding of the university's position, of Alan Green's position on Jeff Capel? And if by chance they wanted to move on, how would that even look?
Yeah, Joe, well, it's great to talk to you guys, first of all. Second, I agree with Bob. I think when you look back at Alan Green's move with Gus Malzahn, that was, he got fired in 2020. NIL came about in 2021. It's a whole new ball game in 2025 than it even was in that first year that NIL was in play. I mean, you need to save every penny that you can at this point to prepare for revenue sharing and try to get up to that $20.5 million as an athletic department, let alone the Victory Heights project. I don't think the Pitt NIL collective's donations have been overly high. So what I'm saying is I don't think that is even close to possible that they would buy out Jeff Capel this offseason. I do think that Alan Green has stepped into this position where since he's been here, he hasn't really seen much. I mean, he saw the football collapse, and now in basketball, man, unfathomable what has happened with this team. I mean, to start 12-2 with those wins early in the season over Ohio State, over West Virginia – and now you're in a position where you don't even know if they can get to 20 wins. I don't think they'll get to 20 wins. That's unfathomable. I thought this team came into the season so confidently, saying that they were going to leave no doubt that they were an NCAA tournament caliber team last year and this year, that I was confident as well in what they could do. I thought those first few games of the season, we saw their talent stacked up. I mean, they took Clemson to overtime. Like, their talent should be competing at the top of the ACC. I could go on forever, guys. It's unfathomable to me how this happened.
Well, I don't think there's many things you can do at this point with regard to coaching, so we'll leave that. But what about players? I was watching Federico the other night, and I know that you're going to see people transfer left and right. I think RMU has a guy who's been at five different places. That's just the nature of it. I'm going to ask you a general question, George, because I think this needs to be asked. When it comes to time spent recruiting, how much should be recruiting high school kids? Because if it were me, I wouldn't even bother with high school kids the way this is going. I wouldn't. Because if you're going to get a Cooper flag, it's going to be for 1 year, and you're only going to go to the blue bloods. The rest of it is just, you may as well just go into the portal every year and come up with your team. Is that a good way to go about business, or do you still think it's fair to go out and recruit high school kids?
I think it's the best way to go about business in this day and age. I mean, you're talking to a guy I've worked with, the Portal Report, as well. It's our company that helps college basketball coaches recruit the portal. I'm looking on my computer right now at our transfer database with guys that have already said that they're leaving, and there are college coaches staring at this right now. The portal opens on March 24th. So there are a lot of guys that have fully adopted this portal-only mindset. Rick Pitino famously said last week that he would turn down a five-star high school prospect in this day and age because you have to replace veterans. You have to win, and winning now is with 24-year-olds and 23-year-olds like Limits and I. But It's tough. I mean, you've got to build that culture. I think Pitt has built a really solid culture in part due to high school kids like Jalen Lowe, like Bub Carrington, that they brought in, and those young guys looked up to the older veterans that were in the program, Jamarius Burton, Minnelli Cummings. So it's a really tough mix. I do think the split should be at least 80-20 portal versus high school. I think Pitt and other schools in the city are doing that. I think they're recruiting and focusing on the portal, planning for the portal as well as any program in the country right now. I think they all understand it. All the coaches in Pittsburgh get it, how you can win in this day and age with transfers. But I do agree with you in that getting a high school kid and waiting a few years, especially, like you said, Joe, with six missed tournaments in 7 years, you can't wait around for a high school kid to develop, and you can't take that risk.
No, and he may leave after 1 year anyway when someone else dangles a carrot in front of him, a money carrot. So I want to ask, you said something I thought was interesting, and I saw this last night, brought it up on our sports call show nightly on KDK Plus and right here on 93.7 The Fan, shameless plug. So Auburn, which is one of the, if not the best team in the country this year in basketball, average age of their players is the same as Oklahoma City Thunder, the best team in the NBA. Now, normally you don't see stuff like this, right? You don't see an NBA team with an average age that's right next to almost the same as a college team that is the best in, right? Isn't that a sign of the times to you guys?
What meaning Definitely. Do you draw
the
from it?
The meaning I draw from it, you got to be 25 years old, it seems, to be in college these days to have a team that's going to win.
Maybe George and I should go start playing and put up some shots in
Oklahoma
the backyard.
City is younger than, almost younger than Auburn.
And are you saying this is a good thing or a
no,
bad thing?
No, I think it's a bad thing for college sports. I don't like the way this has gone. I've been pretty vocal about that. I think this is completely out of control, and I think in order to get it back into control, this is going to take a professional. You're going to have bargaining. You're going to have agents. They already do. You're going to have to, salary cap, a floor, all of it, right? I mean, how else do you bring it back, George?
Man, collective bargaining is a must. I mean, you see these players are 20. Like Chad Baker is a player on Auburn. He played at Duquesne in 2020.
Right.
He's 25 right now. So he's an extreme example. But, Bob, the Pitt tournament team in 2022-23 – was also older than the Thunder at that time, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So it is a sign of the times. It's been going that way for a few years now, and I don't think it's stopping anytime soon. I mean, you look at the Vanderbilt quarterback, Diego Pavia,
yes.
Who sued the NCAA, I believe, for not giving him more eligibility just because he played junior college.
Look at Leonard Hamilton's being sued because of NIL money.
I mean,
he's going to retire.
Isn't part of this, though, because 18-year-olds have more options for pro ball, and shouldn't they? Why should they be forced to play college?
No one's saying they should be forced to. All you got to do is play 1 year, and you can go and do what you want. But what I'm saying to you is that when you go down this road here, you're going to end up ignoring high school kids, who used to be the focus of a lot of coaches.
I mean, at some point, every transfer was a high school kid who came into college.
Yeah,
but if you're trying to
build a program, it's hard to do it this way. That's why I ignore it. I would just go straight to the portal every single –
actually,
how many people are in that portal, George?
Listen, I'd go differently if I were Pitt right now. If people like Rick Pitino are going to ignore five-star prospects and other people
– And guess what? St. John's is one of the best teams in the country. They may win a national championship.
They still have sophomores, freshmen on their team, Bob. I would go out and try to sign high school kids then. I'd go the other way, George. If people are ignoring high school kids, I'd sign the best of them.
And then 1 year later, you'd be naked.
The only issue I bring up with that, Joe, is that these high school kids are almost, and their parents, are almost more delusional than the transfers in terms of NIL, because they see the numbers that are being thrown out there to the five stars, and they're astronomical. They're north of $500,000 for
So what's I don't understand what's delusional about it. If I can get money, I can get money, and if I want to transfer, I'll get more.
I agree with you there, but I mean, some of the dollar amounts in the high school level are not even close to doable by the top programs in college basketball. I mean, if you're telling Jeff Capel that you want $500,000 and you're a freshman in high school, he's going to quickly turn away. I guess it's not delusional to ask for your what you feel you're valued at as a high school player. But I'm saying if Pitt wants to go to the high school route and look for elite high school talent right now, I don't think they can afford to get those kind of guys.
Okay, so you are saying then that high school players are still going to colleges, money and playing, just like transfers. So maybe it's the 3- and 4-star guys you could build around.
I agree. I mean, that's what they've tried to do, too. They've got Amari Witherspoon coming in from D.C. He's a 4-star top 100 guy. He's basically ranked around Jalen Lowe and Bub Carrington. So they've got that strategy down where they get the vets in the portal. They get, you know, some high school guys coming in. But it hasn't panned out with the guys that they've brought in, clearly. I do think, you know, they're going to have a lot of work to do in the portal this year. And obviously, you know, you never know who you're getting back to. I don't have any inside scoop on this Pitt roster, but if you look around, man, it doesn't seem like the morale is too high in there right now. So you never know who's going to leave.
Thank you, George. We appreciate the time.
Have a good day, George.
Thank you, guys. You too.
Can you believe Bob put us over the hour again? Limits? He doubled up. He doubled down on his questions, and that cost us our
victory. Guess what time you got to him? After a 44-minute first segment, which should have been two segments
in
one.
Which featured you.
Not only that, I'm going to need some of those drinks just to get through today's show, I think.
I featured you in that first segment. Bob, let's go to the general.
Oh, we have even more guests than we haven't even gotten to the 11
because
o'clock.
Because of you.
It's 11:01.
Yes.
What happened to the 50-minute mark?
I don't know. You were busy asking your second straight question to George.
Blame it on me, huh?
Right, Limits?
And Joe didn't tell us about the text line either.
Oh, my God.
Three. Oh, since when have you paid attention to the clock?
And you jump on Bob's bandwagon every day, even though he called you stupid the other day.
I defend you all the time, Joe. I need to defend Bob, too. I need to share the wealth and be an honest, objective person.
The Fan Text Line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm. They always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. It's time for Starkey's Card of the Week. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about that from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon. At the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. And for this, we go to Jeff Patton. We like to call him General Patton. Bob, do you have a guess on the card of the week? It's Ovechkin for me.
Well, you stole it because that's the one. I mean,
I'm sorry.
You know, that's obviously one. What else? Could we have a card B? What would it be?
Card B, Luka's triple-double last night against the Mavs.
That's a good one.
Nice pick, oh, Limitless Wonder. Jeff, what do you got?
Gentlemen, good morning. Well, usually it's good morning. Maybe today it's good afternoon, but thanks for having me. Happy Wednesday. Happy 15th anniversary. That's all everyone's talking about. I could have given away 100 more tickets here. Everybody's clamoring to go to the event tonight. So in segueing from the 15, we're going to go with number 15, O'Neal Cruz, today. You would have never guessed that.
Never.
Not your fault. But we're going with number 15 as an homage to the 15th anniversary. I got a fantastic O'Neal Cruz autograph card.
You
only signed two of these cards. And boy, do we need O'Neal Cruz. If we're not going to import some bats, we need some internal improvement. So we're counting on 15.
Awesome. General, we appreciate the time. Will we see you out there tonight?
I wish I could come. I committed to speak at my church about 3 months ago, and I didn't like the prospects of wiggling out of that. So
all right.
I'm sending my son.
You'd have to go to confession.
My son and my daughter-in-law in my place.
Say a prayer for Bob that he can keep within the deadlines of the show.